Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 16 of the Not Quite Hollywood podcast, where today we'll be discussing our movie topics for the week. I'm John.
I'm Jamie.
I'm August.
And take it away, August.
Alrighty. So, last episode, if you listened, we watched the movie American Splendor, and I would say it's considered a biopic.
Yeah.
But what I really liked about American Splendor was that it was a different type of biopic. It was used in a different way. The last biopic that I watched before this is what not Theory for Everything, The Imitation Game.
Yep.
And biopics suck. Super fucking hard. Just how Hollywood it feels. With how Hollywood biopics feel. Before I saw Day Upon, a trailer for a new biopic came up called Genius. It's about Thomas Wolfe, an author in the 1950s, 40s? Around the, he was his editor is Maxwell Perkins. He edited for Fitzgerald. He edited for Hemingway. And watching the trailer, it just looked so generic of a biopic. And I hate how we have to Hollywoodize. Like, we need to build it up to one conflict. When really a lot of these people's lives, it's not just one conflict that they go through. Mm. Or really, I feel like some conflicts are exaggerated to fit the Hollywood mindset, or, you know, the formula, to fit the formula.
Particularly exaggerated, because unless you have somebody that had an amazing, you know, adventure-filled life, you know what I mean, where all this really yeah. crazy shit, then you kind of got to exaggerate for entertainment purposes.
See, yeah.
Some of the more mundane things that may have happened in the life, but just over-dramatize it.
And I'm just saying, is like, the average filmgoer, they're going to see the words pop up, you know, based on a true story of this real thing that happened to this real person. These things may have really happened to this person, but the drama is going to be heightened, and those filmgoers can be like, oh, that's the way it really was for them.
Yeah.
This is exactly how things played out. But there are those that we'll see based on a true story and realize that that's just a fabrication.
Yeah.
But not everyone.
Or it's a seed of truth that becomes like a stepping off point for a growth that
yeah.
completely is infactual and is bullshit, but
it's just have a documentary or a biography and don't make it Hollywood, I feel.
Yeah.
Like, can life not be just interesting enough as it is?
Hmm.
What, we have to exaggerate elements?
So I'm writing, I'm like a fucking plugging. I'm writing like my like story about how I got cancer, and I can't remember shit. So a lot of it's, I'm kind of short, I'm playing up some parts of it. I mean, well, I mean, like,
he's making parts of the story. It's a fake story.
He never had cancer.
He never. I only had leukemia. No,
yeah, I wasn't
like,
going to go there. Yeah,
like, yes. Well, there's some points like where, like, I know this happened. I went to Kmart. I bought some shit with money. It sounds like a stupid small part of it. But then I don't know exactly what happened in that trip. So I referenced something that really I remember had happened beforehand and kind of tie it in and have to kind of like arrange things timeline wise so it can fit the story. So like I'm adjusting as needed. I mean that's how I think every biopic has some sort of, you know, fiction to it.
Well, hasn't science proven that our memories aren't honest anyway?
Well, honestly,
our brains tend to make things up, and we convince ourselves that that's...
Every time you remember a memory, it changes slightly.
Yeah.
So you can't trust it, and it's been too long for me, so now I'm crying.
Okay. We made Jamie cry, so me and August will continue this podcast.
Okay.
No. What do you think about the biopics? We talked about this last episode, right?
Yeah.
Where the sport genre is almost the most cliche. I think biopics are pretty fucking close. Super cliche.
Well, I think biopics about sports
stars
are the ones that are the most cliche. I find that, I guess if you're a big sports fan, you enjoy them. But mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of like biopics with like historical figures and stuff. I just find it bland. I did like Malcolm X. I like the Malcolm X biopic by Spike Lee.
Yeah.
But I find I'm more entertained by artists who have biopics. Like I really enjoyed Walk the Line. I thought Joaquin Phoenix was great. I thought Jamie Foxx. I thought it was good. Like, over dramatized, obviously.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of the scenes, but I always find it those kind more entertaining than anything that's like this guy was a senator or something or like, a dictator from here to here, and it's just like I was just read a history book, you know.
Honestly, watch the trailer for Theory of Everything, Imitation Game, and the one that I talked about today, Genius, and compare them.
Okay.
Because it fits just like this fucking formula. Yep. Even the music, and I'm just...
Yep.
Yeah.
Because they have to build up that, oh, there's going to be tension in this story, and that's why I liked in American Splendor. There really wasn't.
Yeah.
Like, the entertainment was... just his life.
Because,
I mean, the only like sour note would be when his like wife was gone for a little while. I mean, and that was like kind of short, and I felt had relevance and wasn't
when he had cancer.
When he had cancer, yeah.
See, but that was American Splendor's like charm. It was done in a way that felt documentary and narrative.
Yeah.
Without being like, you know, hitting you in the head over the head with it. I like films that have like the real person in him. Like there's some concert films that are Justin biopics Bieber? In a way. No, LCD Sound System. Shut Up and Play the Hits. It's about their last show. Well, they're theoretically coming back, but yeah.
Yeah.
At the time. And how it kind of affects the lead singer, James Murphy. And it was a really cool way of looking at it. It was a documentary, but it was done in a way that was like chronicling their band's early years, formative years, and then, of course, the end of it. And it was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's more of, like, a biography.
Yeah, I got you there. It's almost like idol versus bio.
Yeah. I mean, what would these movies like Imitation Game and stuff like that, mm-hmm. what would those be considered, like, biopic, while LCD System would be considered biography?
I mean, that's more of a concert film in a way, but I like how it tied in like biography elements.
Well, I'm thinking like Amy was in recent one, or Montage of Heck for Kurt Cobain.
Yep, mm-hmm. those were same vein, like bio.
Are they
biodocs essentially instead of biopics?
Okay,
you know what I mean?
Okay,
they're using real footage. They're using real like interviews from people about this person, not a narrative.
I guess I like biodocs more than
I do too,
biopics.
Yeah. I think they're great. What do you guys think of biopics that are like a small point in that person's life? Like Lincoln, for example, they took an approach where it's just like this certain time in his presidency. It's not his entire life, just his this moment in time.
I didn't see it.
I haven't either.
I haven't seen it.
Because I didn't care.
There are other ones like this is another president, Hyde Park at Hudson, or My Week with Marilyn Monroe.
Nope.
No, I haven't either. Is there any?
Jesus.
There's only a handful. When I was thinking about it last night when we talked about it, there's only a handful I can remember seeing.
King's Speech.
That's another one.
I used to have that. And I think I gave it to one of you.
Gave it to me.
Yeah, because I liked it, but I couldn't go back and watch it again. But it was all right.
So since we haven't seen many of them, I think in theory, they're a cooler approach because it's not as cliche. It's a cool story within this person's life. It's not like, here's them as a kid, here's them going through shit as a teenager, and then, oh, they could become a president or become this figure.
Yeah.
I like how it's like this little snapshot of this week or year, and then it's the best story they could tell from that person. Mm-hmm. To me, that's more interesting. It's less cliche than a normal biopic.
I'm trying to think, The Revenant.
Yeah, that is. Honestly, I mean, it's kind of is considered, 12 Years a Slave kind of is, too.
Yeah.
It's a biopic of this guy. I mean, it's his
Would tale. Revenant be considered a biopic despite how much has been changed.
They fictionalized a lot, yeah. I guess the basic idea is there.
I feel like it's practically on par with Django Unchained.
Probably. Is it based on... That's not based on anything, is it?
That's the point.
Okay, well...
Like, it has historical accuracy. Depicts a, you know, certain time, but story-wise, no.
I agree with Jamie. I prefer, if it's going to be a biopic, that it focuses on what was a very influential part of their life or a very shapen moment that put them on the path to become wherever they ended up.
That's cool. Yeah,
I find that more interesting than just trying to follow, like, we're going to take, like, 50 years of this person's life and try to jam it into a two-hour movie, you know?
Those movies always feel long anyway. Yeah. It's just like, okay, look in your watch or phone nowadays. It's like, when is it going to be done?
Can I kind of pitch something to you gentlemen right now? All right. I would love it if a writer went out, found some random person, and be like, can I use your name and some little bit of their life and use it for a biopic? And so you can, you know, have that little tagline saying based on a true story and depict as this, like, nobody, you know, someone who doesn't have, like, an extremely eventful life and just, like, makes so many fucking extravagances of it.
That'd be awesome. It's
fucking hilarious.
Well, I had an idea a few years ago of doing, based on the idea of a biopic where it's usually just somebody who's famous, whether culturally or historically, but just going out and getting snippets of regular people and sit down with them for like half an hour and talk with them about whatever the biggest influence or the biggest experience they had in their life.
Yeah.
Document it and just have a series, have a video of like 20 or 30 people just going through and maybe reenacting them, you know, or maybe doing something, you know, just more to show like everyone has a life. Everyone's got interesting things going on. You know?
There's an interesting... them reenact the moment.
Yeah.
Ooh.
There is an interesting film that kind of does that. Yeah, Sarah Polley, who was an actress, she was in like the Dawn of the Dead remake, The Blonde. Mm-hmm. She became like a filmmaker, right? And there was a film she made called The Stories We Tell. It was about her family's life, and they'd have interviews with the real family, and then they'd have reenactments of those scenes with actors. It was really cool. Like, I heard it was really well done. I haven't seen it yet, but
Scorsese did something kind of like that, where he did like a documentary of his parents.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Nice.
Maybe, I don't know, just his parents or his family as well.
What was it called? Taxi Driver?
Oh, Jesus. If I mean,
Raging Bull.
Raging Bull. Well, if it was Taxi Driver, I mean, which one's Scorsese? Is he Travis Bickle?
That's his dad. His mom's Jodie Foster. It's disgusting.
Yeah. Oh. Is he Slick?
Yeah, Jodie Foster's still mother.
He's the politician.
Oh, Albert Brooks?
No,
that's not politician.
The senator or whatever, the governor.
Oh shit!
So basically, Martin Scorsese's father was trying to kill him. There we go.
Sounds good.
That's just where I'm trying to get to with that one. No, biopics kind of suck. Oh shit! I'm Still Here.
I'm Still Here is the Joaquin Phoenix.
Yes.
I'm Not There is Bob Dylan.
Yes. I get those two mixed up.
I know, me too.
But I'm Still Here is fucking awesome.
I haven't seen it yet.
Just, I mean, it's, you know, come out. It's come to light that it was fake.
Yeah. Sure.
Like it was all a show, but just that idea of Joaquin Phoenix being, I'm going to ruin my career.
Yes.
Just to show the ridiculousness of, you know, actors turning into musicians or musicians turning into actors and trying to, you know, branch out and do all these different forms of entertainment. And also I feel like it's critique on those biopics and like build how biopics will build up these people up on pedestals and being like, these are magnificent people that have hold importance, which is funny because we're talking about biopics we want to see if people...
The greatest biopic of all time, and I can't believe we didn't think of this earlier, is Bronson.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Bronson.
Wow,
Tom
right.
Hardy.
You're right.
Yep.
One of the most entertaining films I've ever seen in my life based on a real-life prisoner in the UK.
That is very hard to forget, though, just because of how entertaining that movie is.
And that's the point. It has to be entertaining. It has to be something. Throw a director like Nicholas Winding Refn. His style fit that person's life like perfectly.
Fucking anarchic. Yeah.
So when I was thinking about this, because my topic is who deserves a biopic? Who have we overlooked? Who has not had a chance? And I was thinking, I want people who have really interesting lives. They can have crazy scenes, crazy stories.
Yeah.
And I got it down to three people that I would pick.
Okay.
And I'll let you guys brainstorm who you think. Richard Pryor.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Definitely needs a biopic.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, his rise into comedy, his as a black man being able to just go out there and just say what he wanted, his struggle with drug addiction, you know, his, you know, trying to get that next level of success, and probably he was super popular but always having these issues and problems with his life stopping him from doing it. I think it would make it a brilliant film.
And he had MS, right?
He had MS.
Yeah.
And other one, I mean, I know it's, I would say it's cliche because everyone's been saying it. You mentioned it earlier, there was like a bio doc of him. Was Kurt Cobain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But what I would like to see is Kurt Cobain's younger years. I wouldn't even... I would... The film, to me, would end when he has the band Nirvana.
Cool.
Because I would want to know what went through his head as a youth, growing up, all of his experiences...
To reach that point.
To reach that point. My third pick is my favorite artist of all time, and that's Tom Waits.
Ah.
And you know Tom Waits because he's an actor as well. He was in Seven Psychopaths and Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
I've got Glitter and Doom on vinyl.
Glitter and Doom. There we go. He's. I read his biography a few years back, and it was like reading a fictional story of this beatnik guy who's been in the industry now for 40, 50 years. And everything he experienced, like all the songs that he writes, his lyrics, are all based on someone he knew, an event that happened, crazy stories in his life.
Like American Splendor.
Yeah, it would be like another American Splendor if it was done almost in that same style. Because Tom Waits would be amazing.
Christ, as a narrator for that?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that would be fucking awesome.
Best voice ever.
Best voice
ever. Who would play him?
I don't know. You'd have to get a series of younger actors. He could play himself at his age now. He's an actor anyway.
Ooh, Willie did the whole Bob Dylan thing.
I'm not there.
I'm not there.
With Tom Waits?
Almost you, Ryan Gosling. Is with Tom Waits. Maybe a little too tall.
Yeah. But I remember reading specifically in the biography where Tom Waits was talking about when he sobered up off of hard drugs. And that was... he used to do cocaine and shit like that.
Oh, Jesus
Christ.
Back
in the day. Everyone did. So he was telling the story that he went to his local coke dealer to pick up some coke, and when the guy opened the door, the guy had a gunshot wound to his stomach, and he was bleeding out basically. And Tom Waits was kind of like, shouldn't we call the doctor or call the 911 or the police? And he's like, no, I can't. You know, didn't want to get in trouble for whatever the hell happened.
Yeah.
And the guy still sold him coke. And Tom Waits said after that, he said, I was done. With like coke and hardcore. He goes, I don't even know if that guy survived. He probably laid in his apartment and died. But he's got all these crazy stories of these characters and people he runs into, and his struggle with cigarettes. He was hooked on cigarettes for a long, long time.
He's off cigarettes?
Well, he's off and on because he had quit, he said, for a long time, and then he did that Jim Jarmusch coffee and cigarettes.
We
did that interview with Iggy Pop, which was so good. And they just smoked and smoked and smoked.
Have you seen that movie?
Oh, yeah, it's amazing.
Because how I came about that movie was a long time ago. I was huge into White Stripes.
Oh, yeah.
I found out that they were in that movie, and I was like,
Oh, there's so many people in that movie. It's ridiculous.
Bill Murray.
RZA and GZA.
What?
With Bill Murray, I think, in that scene.
What? I have to see this.
Yeah.
I think Paul Thomas Anderson might be in it.
Might be in it. Maybe. Alfred Molina.
Who's in Boogie Nights is awesome. I fucking love that guy.
Alfred Molina.
Dr. Octopus
Spider-Man 2.
He was in Boogie Nights?
Yeah, he was the coke dealer.
He got big.
Yeah.
He got real big.
He did.
Wow.
But yeah, the scene again was him and Iggy Pop just having a conversation, drinking coffee, and they started smoking cigarettes. And Tom Waits had quit at that point for a long time, and he said after he had did that scene for Ginger Rouge, he just started smoking again. But yeah, I mean, he probably one of the most interesting lives, if you actually just read like his stories of his own life and everything he's gone through, I think would make an amazing bio doc, I would say. Those are the three I would like
to see. Can you run down through for me again?
It would be Richard Pryor.
Okay.
Kurt Cobain, his early years.
Okay.
And Tom Waits.
Tom Waits,
yeah. I have one.
Yeah, like, oh, I was going to try and hit three.
Oh, you have three? You got one. I have one. I'll get back to you on the next two. Based on our talks last week, Aleksei German.
Yeah.
The strife he had to deal with, like the struggle he had to go to get his films made, and he only made a handful of films in 40 years. Like, that's a powerful story. The more I thought about it after we talked about it last week, the more I'm like, I want to know more about this guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And what a great way to honor him for everything he had to go through to put out his films.
Yep.
Have a film about him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, despite his, like, cultural importance and his impact, I mean, he's not Spielberg or...
Yeah.
No, but...
Josh Whedon, but just, like, that's a very interesting story to have right
there. He left a hell of a mark, you know, for such a limited run of films.
Enough for the Russian government to be like, no.
Yeah.
You can't release this. We do not like that. I've got two, but I'm pretty sure I'll arrive to. I'll start out with an artist. My number three one, Mississippi Fred McDowell. I'm huge into Delta Blues, like Sun House and Robert Johnson. But Mississippi Fred McDowell is just one of my favorite musicians ever. And what really got me was... I think his name's Alan Lomax. He was practically like a white guy, musical historian. And he went through the South and would find all of these blues artists and record them.
Yeah.
I mean, these aren't people that ever had a concert.
Yeah.
But they would like play at the local town house or like play at
a gathering
or something like that. And it's just like this little story about how Mississippi Fred McDowell, Alan had contacted him, and he's like, yeah, sure, you know, I'll do a recording and play some of my songs. Let me get my friend James Woods. And he's like this harmonic player. And they had to like ask around to find out where he was. And they're like, oh, he's like over here. This house or whatever, and they go up, and there's like a bunch of people that are like drinking outside, and Mississippi Fred McDowell comes up, and they like go in there, and James Woods is like passed out, and they like wake him up and be like, hey, you know, you want to join me for this, you know, recording? And he's like, give me about an hour. And so they just like hang out there. James Woods, he gets kind of like gathered around and downs another beer. Probably that's why he was passed out. And then they go and record this album. And it's just like that very rudimentary lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I find like interesting about Mississippi Fred McDowell. It's just like he was someone who was not popular.
Yeah.
He didn't probably perform any shows other than like, you know, some kind of concert. So that's a life that I would love to see.
Yeah. I like that idea because I'm not as huge a Delta Blues fan as you are, but I'm definitely a fan. Mm-hmm. Like Sun House, Robert Johnson and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I did watch, like, when Ken Burns did that documentary series, The Blues, it's probably about 10 years ago, 10, 12 years ago. And they talk about the same thing, about how guys like Sun House, they didn't have record contracts, they didn't have recordings, they didn't have any of that. They just sat and played and sang. And one of the guys doing the documentary said it was so important that those people filmed those people.
Oh, yeah.
And got them recorded at some point because they would have been lost to history. Would have never heard this again. So like Sun House's like Death Letter Blues and...
oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, things like that.
Just, Empire. Preacher Blues. Mm-hmm. I fucking love that song. Just the story of a man who is broke on his ass and has nowhere else to go than to become a preacher.
Yeah.
And he gets up and he's, you know, is like leading the congregation. And all of a sudden, like, a fight breaks out about corn liquor. And how some people are like, we need to get it out of here. And others are like, no, you kidding me? Outside of church, you're drinking it all the time. And so he's just like, fuck it, I'm getting out of here. Like, that's the thing is that with a lot of those blues artists, I feel like they kind of live that lifestyle. Yeah. So I feel like the songs that they sing about, they live that.
Yeah.
So to see a biopic and be like, that interesting story and be like, okay, I'm going to listen to this song, get the lyrics, and be like, that's because it's from this point in your life that it occurred. Number two, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy shit, yeah.
Just because it's a very interesting life, I feel. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't feel that anyone really knew that he had a drug addiction until he died of it.
Yeah.
It's a crackpot internet theory that I heard. But he was like on, was it cocaine? Was it cocaine?
Heroin.
And in like his earlier acting years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like when he did Boogie Nights.
Twister.
Punch Drunk Love, Twister.
Lebowski.
Yeah.
Lebowski, yeah. And then he got off of it. And then one of the last movies that he did before his death was The Master. And so I heard like someone wrote some little stupid joke, I feel, on the internet that saying that because he got back with Paul Thomas Anderson, that he got hooked onto heroin again, like the good old days, and then that's what led to his death, because he binged on it. I feel like it would be a very interesting life other than the drugs. Just because he's had such a very interesting career, and you just look at all the movies that he's worked on with people he worked on. I mean, he was on a Coen Brothers, he was on a Paul Thomas Anderson, and then he freaking stole a movie and All Along Came Polly.
Yeah.
Like, him coming out and, like, falling on his ass and farting at the same time while sleeping on that floor. Like, that's really the only thing I can remember from that movie.
And me too.
Ben Stiller and Jennifer Aniston were the lead characters.
But I like loved him in...
seeing his career.
And it's my favorite... It's not my favorite movie series, but Mission Impossible.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mission Impossible 3. He was my favorite villain in one of those movies ever. Yeah. Just so, like, calculated and cold and intelligent. And it was just... He pulled it off. Yeah, every time I see an action movie and I see the villain, it's always like, ah, it's just cheesy schlock. But he was, like, scary, intimidating.
Definitely. I mean, he's got more presence than the villain in the first and the second one. Have you seen The Master?
I haven't seen The Master.
Fucking awesome performance. His delivery of the line, pig fuck, is just... It's awesome. I wish I could have it of a ringtone, but I'd probably offend quite a few people. Another one is Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. That's a very, like, under-the-radar film, I think. Okay. It's fantastic premise. Have you seen it?
Nope.
I guess it's not really related to the biopic, so... Let's say that for another day.
One's very similar to that. I think the more I was like, I'm not sure if I want this to be a good biopic, but I think it would.
Can I hit my last one?
Oh, sure.
Because I'm done. I know what my
last... You hit a third.
Yes.
Okay.
The middle one was the one I had to think up while talking. Because, and just because I'm a huge, huge fan, I would love to see a biopic of Paul Thomas Anderson. Fuck off.
God damn it.
Fuck off.
What's so weird about his life? There has to be some kind of hook.
Yeah. There's got to be.
That would more be a biodoc to me than a biopic.
Okay, yeah. I would want to see a biodoc. I would want to see a biopic. Oof. I want to see a close-to-home biopic of the previous two.
Okay.
But I would want to see a biodoc of Paul Thomas Anderson.
It's called PTA meeting.
Oh boy.
Right? August Jones. Bum, bum, bum.
Look at that.
Oh, that was below an August joke.
Hopefully.
I mean, August joke is bottom of the barrel.
Yeah,
you're under... That joke was underneath the barrel.
Took a shovel, dug a bit.
Damn.
So my, I guess this is my number three, because two is a little more important. But number three is very similar
that would be your two.
To Philip Seymour Hoffman, is Danny Trejo. Believe it or not.
Actually, I bet you that would be super entertaining.
He was in jail.
Yeah.
He had a fucking dead-end life. Like he was one of those few like people who were incarcerated that became something after. Only when he met Robert Rodriguez and he was in Desperado and that he kind of started his career. And it's to the point now where you can pay, I think you pay him about $250 and he'll be in your student film.
He's been in about 8,000 films.
Because of that.
Can we do a phone interview?
Sure. I mean, we probably have to pay him $250.
So we're gonna start up a Kickstarter,
and we got a GoFundMe for Danny Trejo's phone interview
and Patreon goal.
Yep.
But I mean, he also helps kids too, like who are troubled teens, to get out of that before they go into the prison.
Yeah.
And try to prevent. And so he has a lot of like background like you wouldn't know about.
Yeah.
Because he just plays a badass on movies. You don't really think of that kind of stuff. But it's a cool idea. I mean, I don't know if who could play him. No one, but
Danny fucking Trejo.
Yeah, he plays himself as a kid.
Yeah. Fucking great. Oh my god.
As a baby.
With that face. He's got like, born with this face.
He's got like a little cap with like this propeller spinner on top.
Mommy, feed me some milk from your jets.
Robert Rodriguez should do that. Just make
stylized Danny Trejo. Yeah.
Best fucking movie after Machete Kills again, whatever it's called, in space.
Danny Trejo on a little tricycle.
My number two.
Give me a lollipop, motherfucker.
Or three. because of the serendipitous way he became an icon was Shigeru Miyamoto.
Hmm?
So there was in the 80s, they were shipping a cabinet to America through old cargo ships. It was radar scope.
Hold on one second.
Creator of Mario.
I was going to say, for the listeners and me... Shigeru Miyamoto, okay, yeah.
And so Nintendo Japan was sending Nintendo of America all these cabinets of Radarscope. It was a new game they came out with. By the time it got to America, Radarscope was shit in Japan. It didn't sell well, wasn't doing good at all. Anyway, he's like, hey, Japan, we need something better. They could send another chip and like essentially retrofit the cabinets. So everybody was busy. They just gave it to some young up-and-comer, Shigeru Miyamoto. He made fucking Donkey Kong. And that was, like, the beginning of his career.
Huh.
And then from there, he had hit after hit, Super Mario Brothers, Legend of Zelda.
Yeah.
He just kept going. And he became this, like, superstar icon in Japan. And just because of some serendipitous, we're out of developers.
In America as well.
Right.
I like that idea because besides, like, I guess maybe the music industry... Most art that comes out, whether it's a video game or a comic book or some, or whatever, most of the creators aren't well known.
No.
Like, you know Mario, and you know Nintendo, and you know Donkey Kong,
mm-hmm.
but you didn't know Shigeru Miyamoto.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're just not well known for their works, anyway.
Yeah, they're behind the scenes most of the time.
Yeah.
It's changing now, but, I mean, still, it's like the majority of people wouldn't know who they were.
Mm.
And plus, he's a really good guy. He's a really nice guy. He's always been really, he's like the Tom Hanks of video games. He's always been respected and loved as a person because he's not an asshole. And it's like it's a weird, rare, positive biopic that you wouldn't see most times.
Yeah.
Like, he changed the face of gaming. Like, if it wasn't for Super Mario Brothers, or I mean, I guess Rob, Nintendo Entertainment System, and Rob was the impetus for getting gaming back the way it was. But I mean. Super Mario Brothers was the first hit, the first system seller that they started reviving the game industry. It was done in 84, 83 when it came out in Japan, 83, and that revived it. There wouldn't be games the way we see them today if it wasn't for him. Yeah.
Now, actually, it came to me.
In a dream?
Could there be a problem with these biopics? Where it will demystify these artists.
Yeah, I don't think so. Like John said, you gotta bring light to these people. People have more respect for the medium if this kind of thing was coming out.
Well, it's like, I was thinking one of my favorite artists, lyricist, Isaac Brock from Modest Mouse. I know, I've read up on his life and I know a bit about him, and it's really interesting seeing how, reading his lyrics, okay, you're at this point in your life, or this is what this alludes to within your lyrics. But I don't know if I'd want to know more. Like, just still have a little bit of that mystery behind it.
It's like learning the origin story to characters you never wanted to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I had just thought of one. I don't know why I didn't think of it in my top three. But, and he would never do, I don't believe he would do a biopic, is Alan Moore.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Freaking amazing guy. I mean, his philosophies on everything, his writing, his everything.
Yep.
People who don't know who Alan Moore is, original writer of V for Vendetta, Watchmen, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah.
All these movies that had been made into Hollywood, but were originally, you know, critically acclaimed graphic novels. And he's called himself a wizard before, and a magician, and he's just, there is one called The Mindscape of Alan Moore, which is a documentary, well, it's just an interview, it's like a 2-hour-long interview.
Mm-hmm.
Which is amazing. It's so interesting. He talks about his life growing up and how he got into comics and where he came from and everything. And I think that would make an amazing film. But he's the type of guy, he would never do it. He would never allow it to happen.
He'd have to die first.
He'd have to die first.
You know, I'm going to scratch Paul Thomas Anderson off of my list.
Okay.
I would actually rather just watch a 2-hour-long interview with him.
Yeah.
Not like as a, like a promotional piece for like a new film that he came out. Just a
retrospective.
Yeah, just like, well, that's what get into his mind, yeah, a little bit.
Well, that's what the Mindscape of Alan Moore, it's basically, it's a 2-hour interview, but it's interspliced with just like scenes from like towns he grew up in, and or the town he grew up in, you know, images from the comics he drew, yeah, things like that, you know, and it flows together really, really well. But you get inside of him, like how, exactly, yeah, how he operates. Yeah.
See, I...
which made me appreciate his writing 100 times more.
Damn it, John, you persuaded me. I don't even want bio docs of all three of mine. I just want 2-hour-long interviews with them. Because, I mean, everyone has their bias.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like that would be interesting. Rather than, like, someone saying, like, this is what Mississippi Fred McDowell's life was like. Like, yes, he may have said that, you know, okay, this is what life is like, but you're not hearing him say it. Yeah. In the exact same way. And like with Paul Thomas Anderson, like, yeah, what is his opinions on, you know, his father was a, you know, radio talent, and he basically used his father's notoriety to be able to make his first film.
Yeah. Hmm.
Which is actually a precursor to Boogie Nights. It's called The Dirk Diggler Story. Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
It was Mary Anderson. So,
but yeah,
you just persuaded me.
I would like to see those biopics or bio docs or 2-hour interviews, whichever way.
Yeah, there should be more of them, is what we're saying.
Yep. Yeah, and less cliche bullshit.
Yeah.
Like,
but speaking
of genius,
speaking of cliche bullshit,
good segue.
We are talking about my topic, guilty pleasure.
Bullshit. Oh,
yes. Okay. One of which was the one we talked about last week, Independence Day, guilty pleasure for me.
Mm-hmm.
Last episode, Basketball, was another one for me. But these are films, if you don't know, that are ones you kind of don't want to tell people you like, or they're critically panned, and for some reason you have some affiliation with them or some affinity for them.
Just critically?
No, not necessarily. It could be critically fan. People could shit on them. I mean, if you're the one person that likes them, you're fucking definitely guilty pleasuring that shit.
Yeah.
Any of them stand out to you guys that you're of your own that you want to air out?
Do I want
to
admit them?
Yes.
I'm going to admit one.
All right.
And I saw it, I think, 3 times in the theater. Wild Wild West.
Damn. Okay.
I liked it. I liked Wild Wild West.
That's some childhood nostalgia showing in that one.
I was an adult.
You were 22?
I was 22.
The cornfield scene. Those fucking saw blades?
Oh,
that is cool. Fucking awesome.
No, there was a lot of cool shit I liked in it. And I know it got, like, critically just destroyed, but I was just like, I enjoyed myself watching it.
Oh, was it Rip Torn?
Rip Torn? Wait, he's in the movie?
Oh, it was Kenneth Branagh.
Kenneth Branagh was the villain.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did a fucking awesome movie. Shit on that spider? I don't care. That's fucking cool. Huge ass mechanical spider in the Midwest. That's awesome.
It was just a summer blockbuster. It was really fun.
Yeah.
You know, Kevin Kline. I love Kevin Kline.
Kevin Kline was good too.
Will Smith.
Will Smith is, yeah, he was good.
He's good.
Yep. Yeah. Selma Hayek. Hello. She was a great actress.
Yeah.
Yeah, just watch Frida.
I haven't seen it yet. Heard good things.
I've only watched a few scenes.
Really? Which one? The one with the eyebrows? Or should I say brow?
Speaking of that guy from Spider-Man 2 and Boogie Nights, he's in that
Alfred movie. Molina.
Yeah, he's in that
movie. That's right.
Plays her husband.
Yep.
I'll admit to one.
Admit it.
The Happening.
But you've said this before. the Happening. The podcast.
I have?
Yeah, you said it was like the best B-movie ever.
Well, as if people heard the previous episode, so I'm going to say it now again. The Happening. That's a guilty pleasure. Fucking love now, The Happening.
Wait. Do you like it because it's like B-movie schlock? Or you actually like that it's a well-made film? Or you think it's a well-made film? I haven't seen it. I have to admit, I haven't seen it. Because there's a difference.
No, for me, really, on this movie, there isn't. This is a well-made B-movie schlock.
Okay.
Like, it does the B-movie schlock so well.
But it was a consciously B-movie schlock? Or was it, I'm trying to make a good movie in it?
See, I read an interview, and I've tried to search for it. Just okay. So I can, like, pull it up for people and be like, even M. Night Shyamalan said, this is a B-movie. I think it was on, like, it was huge in the comingsoon.net way back in the day. I don't even know if that shit's still around.
Yeah, but still is.
They had an interview with him. And he even said it. He's like, this is a B-movie. He probably got tired of people being like, your movies are shit.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, was it Newsweek said that this is the next Spielberg?
Yeah.
Like, do you think M. Night Shyamalan wouldn't be, you know, told me he was the new Spielberg? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's a huge, you know, quota to fill.
Yeah.
Yep. During that time. So, yeah, he admitted, like, this is B-movie schlock. And, I mean, there's actually some pretty good moments in it. Are you going to watch it ever?
Maybe. But you can spoil it. That's fine.
August could force you to watch it.
I already know what the whole thing was.
John Leguizamo.
Yep.
He, like, separates from the group. What? John, you're laughing.
Nothing.
Did I say Leguizamo?
Leguizamo?
Leguizamo. See, I can't pronounce shit, all right? Leguizamo. John Leguizamo. He separates from the rest of the group to go, like, to some other town to meet up with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he was with a group in a Jeep. And they're just riding along the Jeep, going through this town, and, like, they come across this road, and it's just, like, a bunch of people have hung themselves in this tree over the road. Like, it looks very cinematic. It looks really cool. And so it just, like, lets you know that, okay, this place has been hit with the wind.
The Happening.
Yeah, it's been hit with the Happening. And so they're riding along, and it's quiet. And they hear a, and they, like, look up, and they see in the canopy over the Jeep, there's a hole. And they're just all, like, they don't even, I don't think they even try to cover it up. They're just, like, and so, like, it goes outside the Jeep, and you see it, and it just, like, goes to the stop. Sits there for, like, a beat and a half. And then starts driving, and just, like, drives straight into a tree, and, like, a body gets ejected. And then we get Leguizamo, or whatever. Leguizamo.
The clown.
The pest.
Yep.
Oh, the pest. Oh, the pest gets out of the Jeep. And, like, he just, like, sits down. I think he has, like, a broken arm or something, or a broken leg. I don't know. He's fucked up. He just, like, grabs a shard of glass from the windshield and just, like, starts cutting him. And then, end scene. And it's just, like...
It's a cool scene.
And it builds up, like, his character. Like, you know, him and Mark Wahlberg, they're both teachers at this high school. And so they were, like, you know... Buddy, buddy, and you're like, okay, you know, we're gonna see the splintered off story. We're gonna see where he's gonna go. You're helpful, and then you just, like, you get hit with that, and then, end. And it's just like, and I mean, people shit on, like, you know, the whole wind, but I feel like that's an interesting concept to where we overpopulate the earth, that we start stepping on nature's territory, so they build up a defense because we built Roundup.
Yeah.
To kill weeds.
Well, hell, I mean, we're the virus and they're building up immunity.
Exactly.
Yeah. Same idea.
And they found a way to protect themselves, and that's an interesting way, you know, rather than having, you know, trees come to life and start roaming the world and stab their branches through people. Like, it's bioterrorism.
Cool. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to give it a watch.
A lot of Shyamalan's movies are considered guilty pleasures for me. So, obviously, Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, we all agree they're pretty good movies.
Yeah, haven't seen either.
I like Signs a lot. We talked about The Village last week. Like The Village a lot. I think you guys both did.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Okay. Well, screw you. I even didn't hate Lady in the Water. It had a fantasy aspect to it. It wasn't like that good. Paul Giamatti again. Super good, but I liked some of the things from it. Like that, like kind of like The Happening. Then The Happening's right after that, but...
It was just so weird. Just like John... Someone pronounce his last name for me.
Leguizamo.
How he has like that one beefed up arm.
That's not him. Freddy Rodriguez. He was in like Planet Terror and 6 Feet Under.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love Planet Terror.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, people talk about how in Signs, about the whole water and stuff like that. Like, that's really just dumb. It's just like, yeah, Lady in the Water has it bumped up to 10. I actually liked how it worked in Signs.
I didn't. I hated Signs.
That's all right.
I love that thematic element, though. Like, you get that flashback to Mel Gibson's wife when she died. Yeah. And she's, like, near death. And then she just says these, like, really bizarre random things.
But that's the problem I had. I think it was the stupidest setup for a revelation.
Swing away, John.
Swing away. Swing away. I'm like, but, fucking dumb.
But.
I thought you were throwing up.
No. But. The like... The fan theory, whatever, that they're actually demons. Because that could be that she's, like, halfway stepped into heaven.
Huh.
And the angels are being like, we know the demons are going to, you know, come to Earth.
Interesting.
So here's some, you know...
It's still cheesy.
Well, yeah.
I just didn't think it was pulled off very well. It just,
I like how that film in particular was shot. It was shot as... As blasphemous as it sounds, like a Hitchcock film.
Oh, yeah.
And it was really cool. There's paying homage to Hitchcock.
There's one location.
Yep.
All at the farmhouse. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's one scene where they go into town.
And then, one scene where he's at fucking Shyamalan's house. Shyamalan, of course, is like, yo, I trapped him in the pantry.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm a piece of shit and I hit your wife.
Well, even with M. Night, my biggest problem is I love The Sixth Sense and I loved Unbreakable. And I thought they were brilliantly written. And then I went to Signs and everything since. And I was just like, what happened? You know, that's the question everyone's saying. Yeah. What happened to
it?
Because I'm that type. I'm like that. I'm kind of elitist in the sense that
fucking
like an artist puts out something
pretentious.
As great as like The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable. And then follows it up with something that's just felt subpar compared.
Here's the thing, too. I think that a lot of those critical reviews, positively, of Sixth Sense got to his head. He was really fucking cocky.
Yeah.
Like, outwardly cocky in interviews, and I think he learned his lesson. Because he really started falling hard.
Still making money.
I will mention one more guilty pleasure. I think it was a cool idea, a different approach on the superhero genre, and that was Hancock.
Yeah.
I like the idea of it.
Love the first half.
I kind of liked the whole Charlize Theron thing, though. There were some cool things about it, but it wasn't really, like, executed really well, but I still enjoyed, like, the idea behind it.
You would have been better with Charlize Theron if she was just some woman walking down the street, and she finally sees Hancock and just bitch slaps him into a fucking building, and she turns out that she's the villain.
Okay.
And do some, like, Highlander superhero shit.
Sure.
Because isn't it like that there can only be one or something?
No,
speaking of guilty pleasures, the almost the entire Highlander series and TV show, I am all for.
Never.
What's the first one?
The first one's pretty good. And I will eventually, in this podcast run, we'll do the original Highlander.
Cool.
Okay.
Highlander 2 was just a clusterfuck mess, which they had to re-edit it to change the entire storyline. But I think, like, the third and the fourth ones I really liked, even though the budgets have been cut drastically. Mm. But it worked a lot better storyline-wise as far as the characters. And then the show, I loved the show.
I've got another guilty pleasure. I'm going to fuck up the name. The Happiness of the Katakanas? Or Katakanas? I know you guys don't fucking know this movie. Takashi Miike. He did Audition.
Oh, okay.
Ichi the Killer.
Yes.
13 Assassins or whatever. Yes.
Cool.
I was at Bournemouth and I saw it and I was like, oh, Takashi Miike, yeah.
Yeah.
And end up spending $30 on it, and it's not a good movie.
Yeah.
It's but the reason why it's a guilty pleasure is because while watching it and I reach the end, I'm like, okay, that wasn't like an extremely great movie. It was all right. But it was so fucking unapologetic. Like, he didn't care. Like, I'm gonna do whatever I want.
Yeah.
It has a very interesting premise. It's just like, the Sound of Music. They even have a variation of the Sound of Music song.
Really?
And zombies.
Okay.
In Japan. Like, every person, tenant that comes to this hotel that they come across or that they own, end up like killing themselves.
Okay.
And so they have to bury them and they turn into zombies, and like, it's very weird, not extremely great movie. And so that's why it's guilty. It's just like
when you pay a lot of money for a film because you think it's like, oh, I'm not going to find this anywhere else, or it's rare, or it's whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And then you watch it and you're like disappointed. And you're just like, oh, I could have bought like six great $3 movies or something. You know, or even,
oh, yeah.
You know,
just a different $30
movie.
Yeah. And I mean, I wouldn't say that like I regret it in that way of getting it. Feel like I am forcing myself to like it.
Well, if you paid that much for it, if you bring it back, it'll give you a good chunk of change back for it.
Yeah,
it's gonna go on the value of what it's
true.
Yeah.
No, I think I want to keep it around though, just to torture people with.
No
shit. Shit.
Hard to be a good movie. I'll show you a movie that's hard to be good. That's a
pretty good segue. Oh boy.
Well,
I think we're at that time where we're gonna find out what our communal movie is.
And that's me today. August had been alluding to it earlier. He's like, please don't make us watch Forrest Gump. And I think he's really upset if we watched Forrest Gump. But I thought it was funny because my choice is the Robert Zemeckis directed, Tom Hanks starring, Castaway.
Okay.
Oh, all right.
I love this movie so much, and I want to talk about its like importance to me, significance to me. So that's the movie we're watching.
It's all about you.
No, it's not about me.
No but complaints.
I love the movie.
But were you trapped on an island?
No.
Did you want to fuck a volleyball?
Yes.
Okay. But I want to address this little thing between you two. Did you love or at least enjoy the movies I've picked for you guys?
I enjoyed
them. I had a great time so far.
I forgot what this
but is. But you two decide you're going to one-up each other on making each other watch movies the other one won't enjoy. And who's stuck in the middle?
Whoa.
Who's the one that has to watch them, too?
He's the one who said Hard to Be a God is a hard to be a good movie. Oh,
no. Well, you right. Purposely set us up. I'm going to give you shit.
I gave you warning.
I was you playing said, with your emotions, I said I would give you a shitty movie, and Castaway is not a shitty movie, in my opinion. I could have done Forrest Gump.
No.
I could have done fucking Harriet the Spy.
I want to speak to the audience. Do you hear what's going on right now? We're trying to one-up each other in horrible movie experiences, and I'm providing you guys with quality films.
Fuck it. Puppet Master versus Demonic Toys.
Yes!
The shitty sci-fi 2004 movie.
I honestly forgot. Oh, not quite Hollywood and
an American Splinter.
We've only each given each other two movies?
Well, I got shafted the first time. Mm. Civil War is my movie. Fuck you. That's not fair.
This is the
third round, actually. Yeah, this is the third round.
This is the third round.
Because the other one I chose was...
I thought we've each had more choices than that. No. Jesus.
Nope.
It just feels like forever.
Mm-hmm. With each other, August.
Yes. I wish you would have chosen Forrest Gump.
I didn't want to. I don't have it.
I haven't been too angry in a podcast yet.
Yet? I guess you're right.
To where I'm like yelling.
Next time, I'll get John too. He'll fall in the collateral damage category. But yeah, so next week we'll talk about Castaway as the communal movie.
Right. And I'm fine with that.
This is not bad. This is not quite Hollywood. We are a weekly or bi-weekly, double weekly, dual weekly.
We double team the week every week. Every week.
We hit it hard on Tuesday, and then we come back for the second round on Thursday, right?
We gang bang podcasts out.
Run a train on weeks.
We run a train on weeks.
So this is episode 16, and follow us on Facebook. We're not quite Hollywood. Very simple to find. You'll find this badass podcast cover, or I should say profile image that John made. And right now our cover is me in August centrally hugging her. I'm actually kind of like creepily. Oh, it's still there.
Oh, I did. I provided both pictures.
You did. Yeah,
good job. Yeah. You are now the social media.
Oh, good.
Manager.
John can post about stuff now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I can respond in your guys' name.
Yeah.
Wouldn't go that far.
Go ahead.
Damn it.
I don't care.
You can do it for me, not Jamie.
Well, what about the email?
Yeah, the email's notquitepod@gmail.com. Pretty simple. Please email us with questions if you have any suggestions for a movie or a topic that you want us to talk about.
There's a movie you've heard that you've wanted to watch. Shoot us an email and see about it. I mean, most of these movies we own.
Sure.
So we have access to it. So just let us know and we might work something out being able to watch one of these movies we've talked about.
And if anyone listening knows how to get a copy of The Man from Hong Kong,
yes,
please let me know.
We want to talk about that.
We have Long Weekend that we need to do.
Long Weekend.
Yep. Right. But yeah, this is Not Quite Hollywood. I'm Jamie.
I'm August.
I'm John.
See you next week.
Later, guys. No goodbye from August.
Bye!